Hey, all. Evan Hill here of Real Hawk Talk. Super excited to talk to you guys about our good friend Blake Johnson of ManifestFit.com. Football season is quickly approaching, and it is a struggle to stay in shape while eating burgers and nachos. ManifestFit.com is your one, only, true online personal training service with workout and nutrition programs specifically based on your needs. They work with clients all over the U.S., and what makes Blake and ManifestFit.com so unique is that they don't believe training should be a luxury item. Now's the time to start. Head over to ManifestFit.com. Click on how to join and fill out the form. Their team will get back to you ASAP and help you start building a healthier, happier, louder Seahawks fan life.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 322nd episode of Real Hawk Talk. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at HawkBlogger. In fact, we should be live on Instagram, so you can follow and watch the show there as well if that's working. Hopefully it is. Sure looks like it. I will say Instagram and their live video option is, the API is a little bit of a painful experience. I don't really think they want people doing this multicast kind of thing. They probably just want people going directly from the app and doing live video. But in any event, you can find us there. And we're gonna push Instagram and Threads. I think there's a decent chance we're gonna be pushing that a little bit more this season. As I bring in the other guys, I will say Twitter's feeling a little bit more and more like an empty room. We'll talk about that in a second, but let me bring aboard Jeff Simmons at Real Jeff Simmons. How are you doing, brother?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. I'm happy we have a show tonight. This is my baseball night usually, so we got a ton of rain today. So I got the whole night off. So I'm good, man.
It is not raining here. I just got off the golf course. 90 felt like a million degrees out there. So I don't think anyone's thinking about rain around here right now. But I'm glad and selfishly that we get to have you on tonight. And then Derek Gabby, at Derek, DERYCKG, underscore. You got to have the underscore. You won't find him. Derek, man, it's been since the draft. How are you doing?
I'm good. Glad to be talking Hawks. I've had a hectic week, so it's good to relax and talk football.
Yeah. I hear you on that. So I want to get back to the Twitter thing for a second because – I would have probably moved off Twitter a while ago for like a bunch of the changes I haven't really liked, but our community's there. We've built a community over many years and I've enjoyed it, but increasingly I kind of feel like you're just speaking into the void. There's some engagement for sure, but I'm wondering how many of the people that are even quote following us on Twitter are even on Twitter anymore. I don't know if there's a good way to figure that out.
I think the separating the for you and the following, now everyone just goes to the following, which is great. Yeah. We get it in chronological order now. But there was a sweet spot with the old Twitter where that, yes, it wasn't perfectly in chronological order, but you would still see tweets from like an hour ago pop up that were popular. Uh-huh. And I think that really helped with engagement. And now if everyone's looking at following, they're only seeing what's in the last few tweets. Period.
Is that what's
happening? For you is filled with absolute spam.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Are you finding that, Jeff? Because you're on there a lot. I mean, are you finding it a little harder to find like real content? Maybe this is all in my head, but it feels like significantly different over the past 3-4 months than it had been.
No, Derek said it pretty good. When you're on the For You page, you end up in these like weird wormholes and you're outdated. Like I sent my buddy something, like it just came up. It was the first day. I didn't look at the timestamp, but I was like, that's like 2 days old. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh my God, I missed this whole thing. And it just feels like, depending on what time you sign on or what, like I find like if I'm texting someone about something, all of a sudden my For You page will be talking about that. And it's just like, it's getting creepy and it's getting weird and it's out of order. It's clunky, but like there's times in my day, I'm just like, I want to get off this site, but then I get all my content from there. And Brian knows how much of a sicko I am with content. And I can't, I'm like a full blown addict. Like I can't stop it. It keeps getting worse and worse. And I keep finding myself in there, but it's definitely a worse product than it was.
I think the worst part is that, Jeff, do you find yourself just, you're on the For You page without even realizing it? Like you're on following, you'll go somewhere else, and then you hit the home button and it brings you to the For You. And I'm like, I don't even realize I was on this page.
That's it. And I find myself getting mad at things. It's a time suck. Like,
Yeah. I guess I'm looking at, you know, reports about Threads growing, you know, almost 200 million active users now. And it thought like it kind of surged and then it fell. And then I think it's climbing again. I'm just wondering if we're like in the death throes of, I mean, I've never been into the guy. It's like, oh, Twitter's dying, but I'm wondering if we're getting there. so we'll see this season. My whole point of all of that is, follow us on Instagram, follow us on Threads. You can find the @HawkBlogger account where we'll make sure and keep stuff as updated as possible along the way. I've never been an Instagram guy, so it's a new world for me. But in any event, Derek, I want to start with you because, like I said, the last time I talked to you was the draft and you were flipping out excited about Byron Murphy getting picked. But you were at least the third out of three people that were on the show in terms of absurd levels of excitement. You were not, you know, twisting your body parts the way Evan was or, you know, swearing at the into your mic the way I was. But time's gone on. Where are you with the Seahawks right now? When you think about the Seahawks, what's your kind of general state of mind?
Yeah, I don't think much has changed in my mind since the draft, but I don't think during the draft pods we really had a chance to talk about our expectations. So, you know, things I want to see in year one, I guess I'm just more curious than anything about the coaching staff. To me, it's less so about the players. It's more so about, are these coaches going to succeed? I think there's legit questions around Ryan Grubb. Will that offense translate to the NFL? He also had a fantastic offensive line at Washington. The Seahawks offensive line is not that good, at least hasn't been. Obviously, we're hoping Charles Cross can make a step forward and hopefully Abe Lucas can come back. But so that's one question. The second question is, can Mike McDonald replicate, probably not exactly in the first year, but can he put together a top 10 defense? Can he put together a top half defense that's more consistent than the Seahawks defense has been? I'm really curious to see that because their defense really turned around and really started becoming great when they traded for not Patrick Queen, Roquan Smith. So given that and the linebacker situation with the Seahawks, they did not go out and spend big money. They did not retain Jordan Brooks. So they got some kind of middling free agents, I'll say. No bums, but I think they're you know, they weren't top of the market guys. So I'm really curious to see if the defense can succeed without top tier linebacker play.
What if people asked you, do you expect the Seahawks to be a playoff team next year? What would your answer be?
No.
Interesting. Jeff, what would your answer be to that question? Do you expect the Seahawks to be a playoff team next year?
I'd probably go no also. I think they're right in the fringe of it, but again, that's not how I'm going to view this season, but no.
Yeah. I mean, I get that. And I think that there's some wise, healthy skepticism in those answers. I'm in a different mindset with it. I really do feel like it's less about the playoffs. It's more about the fact that I think the Seahawks are maybe one of the more underrated teams potentially in the NFL. I think that based on the last 108 straight days of me doing Seahawks coverage and looking at a bunch of different questions and looking at how rookie head coaches, youngest head coaches in the NFL have performed, the types of impact that coaching changes can have on relatively stable rosters, and then adding some of the guys that they've added. I mean, we've kind of gone through it, Jeff, to some extent. We've talked about different units. I think the safety group's better. We had that show. We did that together. And that's not something I knew, would have said before. you know, the cornerback group, I think it's better. The offensive line group can't be worse. I mean, knock on wood, but I think it's going to be better. Don't know how much better. I think the running back room is going to be better. I think the receiver room is going to be better with JSN. I don't see how JSN is, no matter what, whether Tyler Lockett recedes, I think JSN is going to more than make up for what Tyler's going to step back. You kind of go on and on and on. There's a few places the defensive line is significantly better, like worlds better. And then you add the coaching into that. And so I'm like, they won 9 games last year. And yes, you know, it was kind of on the edge, but there's a lot of folks that are like the over under 7.5 games wins for the Seahawks this year. And a lot of people are kind of like, yeah, I might take the under on that. I don't know, man.
I'm not there.
I just don't feel that way.
I think the distribution is a little skewed towards the upside. I would agree with that. I'm probably right around the 8-9 win mark for them. That's what I hope to see. I'd be satisfied with that as long as we're kind of seeing the steps forward. I think Brian, the JSN shout's a really good one. This is probably Tyler Lockett's last year, so it'd be really great to see JSN make that step forward, show he can be one of the leading receivers, you know, a top two guy on this team.
Jeff, as I kind of rattled that off, I saw your wheels turning. Like, tell me where you see it differently. Tell me where maybe, you know, I've got rose-colored glasses on.
No, I see it the exact same way. It's just, I think their roster is pretty good. I just think the man of change is going to take time. I want to see the, I think they're the path. I think there's a path for them to be great. And that's really what, I think McDonald has the ceiling to make this team great. And that's really a bigger thing to me. And I'm kind of, I look at the roster and I see there's some obvious issues, but their trajectory is kind of where I want it to go. I think for me, this year is about, can Witherspoon become great? He was very good last year. Is Byron Murphy as good as we think he's going to be? Can DK take a step? Can JSN take a step? So I'm with you there on the roster. I really like this roster. Obviously the offensive line I wish was better. Obviously I wish they had a little more stable fallback plan, a linebacker. But if you go position by position, I think it's a really healthy roster. I think they have a unique amount of young players that are good. My issue is not the personnel. I just think the whole thing is going to take time to come together. And I've been saying that consistently. I think it's going to be a very complicated defense. And I think it's going to take a little time. But in terms of like projecting where the team is, where the roster is, I think they're in a really healthy spot. I think they're in a way better spot than a lot of first-year coaches end up in. Everyone focuses on sort of like where certain teams are, but they're, if Murphy and Witherspoon are great, they're projecting in a really, really good way. If they're not, they're in that purgatory phase. It's going to be really, really hard to get out of. But to me, like if you go position by position, I was laughing a little bit because you used the word receding for Tyler Lockett. That was just me. I started. Hey. Yeah. I wear a hat every episode. I get very little. I saw him in the back of my head the other day on a picture. It's not good.
Don't do that to yourself, dude.
So I honestly don't know. I think the 7.5 is low, but I have no idea what to expect this year. I'm excited about it. But if I'm looking at like where the team is big picture, I'm really aligned with you, Brian. I'm really encouraged.
Well, so one other thing I'll just throw out there. I'm curious. So I told you guys about that I'd done some research on first-time head coaches, youngest head coaches in the NFL, and what kind of impact they had. I had honestly forgot that Sean McVay took over the 32nd ranked offense and turned it into the first ranked offense in his first season. Like that's astounding. Like it was largely with the same roster. There wasn't a significant amount of change that year.
Yeah, they got Whitworth at left tackle.
They got Whitworth. Cup.
Whitworth is the big change.
Robert Woods. You know, they got Woods and Cup in the same year.
Cup was later. I thought Cup was a year later.
No, Cup was 2017 draft. Cup was in the Seahawks' worst draft ever. Yeah, they got a lot of personnel upgrades. It was really a whole offense where the offense was a joke. Yeah.
The piece that I'd add to it that I just did the other day was looking at just the changes that jumped year over year on defensive rankings. Not, you know, I was just looking at which defenses made the biggest jumps from 2022 to 2023. One of them that I was shocked by was the Carolina Panthers. I could not believe the Panthers were the fourth ranked defense in yards per game allowed last year. Now, some of that's because of their offense, but in general, it took a significant jump. They allowed, I want to say, let me double check this, but they allowed almost like 1,000 yards less that season. 956 yards less, 56 yards per game less in 2023. So they jumped 18 spots in the rankings from 22 to 4.
There's a reason Ivero was getting head coaching interviews.
Well, that's you're jumping to the punchline, Derek. But like the other two that I kind of called out were the Houston Texans. They jumped 16 spots in the yardage rankings. They jumped 16 spots in the points allowed rankings, and then the Minnesota Vikings jumped 16 spots in the points allowed rankings, and they jumped 15 spots in the yards allowed. These are like going from being like, I think the Vikings went from 31st to 16th, you know, like, and if you look at those teams and I went player by player, like there were not like massive roster, like additions. It was a lot of guys having career years, like a lot of guys. And they weren't necessarily guys that were like their first seasons playing. They had played a couple seasons. So what was the unique link? Brian Flores, new defensive coordinator. DeMeco Ryans, new head coach, defensive leader. Ejiro Evero, new defensive coordinator. And so like there's evidence that really good coaches can make massive jumps. And I think the Seahawks increased their talent on that side of the ball as well. So if you knew, let me ask it this way. If you knew that the Seahawks defense was going to rank in the top 15 of the NFL next year, if that's the only thing you knew, would that change your answer about whether they make the playoffs?
Yeah.
Derek?
No, I'd still call them a fringe playoff team. More likely, definitely more likely, but I still think they're probably on that 9-10 win sort of area.
Yeah. So that is playoff fringe. And I think that's reasonable. What's the kind of deciding factor? Like what would have to become true as you're going through the season to believe that they are going to be a playoff team? And I'm going to ask you to save the easy stuff of like, oh, if the 49ers, you know, all of them get injured and they suck and the Rams suck, like forget that. I mean, specifically about the Seahawks, what would, if you found something out about them, what would it be? What is it? Offense, defense, player specific, coaching specific? What are you looking at?
I think there's any number of things that would make me say this is a playoff team. I think one thing you touched on is the defensive line and has a lot better potential now. Byron Murphy, I'm really excited to see him steps forward from some of the other guys who have been around. Boye Mafe really had a great season. Hopefully he could take another step forward. Derek Hall, it's a second round pick. I know he wasn't maybe the favorite pick that John Schneider has ever made, but he's a bit of an unknown. So hopefully he can make a step forward in the second year. There's guys on the defensive line that if that unit becomes top five, top 10 even, and getting pressures, sacks, I think you have something there. Because, Brian, I know you've talked about it a lot. How often are we watching playoff games and you're like, wow, they're just getting after the quarterback consistently? And that's something that's really been missing since 2017 maybe with Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril's last seasons. So that would be one thing. The second thing would be the flip side is the offensive line really taking a step forward. We see Charles Cross make a jump in year three, which isn't unheard of. It sometimes takes a couple of years for offensive linemen to make a step forward. Hopefully we see Abe Lucas come back and be as, you know, as much of a mauler as he was in those first, I don't know, first half of his rookie year. That would be wonderful. And then maybe one of these rookies on the offensive line, on the interior, excuse me, can slot in right away.
What about you, Jeff? What are the bellwether parts of this team for you that are going to either dramatically improve? Let's just focus on that. What are the things that you could see happen once the season starts that would really raise your ceiling of what you think this team could be in 2024?
For me, it's for sure the offensive line. To me, the offensive line by far is the number one group that will impact the ceiling of the team. And a lot of people will talk about Geno Smith. I think for the team to become a complete team, they need to find a running game again. And I think that it's been a huge hole. And I think Josh was joking with us on text the other day. Like, Josh is worried of all the changes we made. We're going to watch like every couple series, Kenneth Walker gets hit in the backfield and the play's dead before it starts, or he's trying to circle around. Like, for years, when was the last time the Seahawks had a good running game? And their stats, like third and three or less, like they were one of the worst teams at converting when it's a run play. And I think, obviously, Brian actually kind of discounted this, but I believe that Geno is a quarterback that is a little more reliant on pass protection than some other quarterbacks. There are some numbers that actually say that's incorrect. However, my eye test, that's what I believe. I believe it's like the Jared Goff Purdy level player. But I think to complete the whole thing, I think they got to be able to run the football. And everyone talks about Sean McVay and Shanahan, all these innovative those. And one of the things McVay did last year is he went away from the wide zone and went to more of a power run game. And it kind of unlocked their whole offense. And I think for the Seahawks to be a sustainably good offense, they have to be able to pass protect, obviously. But I think they got to get back to being able to run the ball. I think it's going to open up their entire offense. And I think that can allow them to kind of get really build an identity of who they want to be on offense. And I know Grubb passed with those receivers a lot, but I think with the investments they've made in Charbonnet and Walker, they have the talent at the skill spots, but the offensive line is the group that brings it all together. The left guard position is a huge question mark. Can Olu step forward? I really want Christian Haynes to win that job at right guard. I think we all do. I think that's a huge, but I guess there isn't one position you can hang your hat on that offensive line going into the year. Not one of five. There's a lot of fun young players. There's four very interesting young players, but they need to have stability there. They need to have guys they can hang their hat on. The group needs to grow together. This is the biggest development to me as their offense, as much as anything.
Yeah. It was interesting hearing you say that, because for me, offensive line is definitely the clear cut answer, but then it is more specifically the run game. I think the Seahawks have had an inconsistent, rudderless, run game for years now. And I don't think it's because they lack talent to do it. I just don't think that that's a part of their game they've been able to lean on. And I think that's had a lot of ripple effects that most people, it is not probably one of the top six or seven things that anyone else mentioned. You don't hear that on the radio. You don't hear that or see people write about it. They talk about Geno. They talk about the passing game. They talk about Ryan Grubb. They talk about the defense. Like a million things. But being able to actually run the ball with some consistency and, be able to convert short yardage situations, be able to convert goal-to-go situations, and making it not all Geno and not all pass protection in third and long kind of situations, it's a big deal. It's a really, really big deal. And the Seahawks, like you said, were one of the worst teams in the NFL last year in third and short. And part of the reason was they ran the ball, only like 30 something percent of the time on third and less than 3 yards to go, which is one of the lowest rates in the NFL. So I really do believe that by itself could be a really big change. And I think you're right as well. It's going to that right guard position and the center position. As you start to break it down further, is Olu Olutimi going to be a good player, not just a fill in? We just don't know those things yet. So that's kind of the part of the reason I wanted to ask that was because as we start getting in closer to camp, camp is, technically 7 days away where rookies are going to report, but really 14 days away when the Seahawks really start training camp. What are the things, what are the storylines? Like the top three things, top three players, top three specific items that you're going to be like paying attention to see? Is it a depth chart thing? Is it, what are you going to be looking for? Derek, I want to start with you on this one.
Yeah, I want to see first and foremost how that interior offensive line shapes out. Left guard, center, right guard. What spots are the most contested? Is Christian Haynes going to be given the job, or is he going to have to battle with someone else? Who knows? I think the second thing would be, and it's a little more esoteric, but how does the offense look? Is there tempo involved? Or is there, you know, more creativity, I guess? It's hard to define, and we're relying on, you know, secondhand accounts of it. But I want to see that click, and I guess we'd have to wait till the preseason to really see that as fans. But I want to see some more variance there, some more creativity there. Those are probably the two things I'm looking at.
Jeff, what about you?
The low-hanging fruit is linebacker. Linebackers, the biggest question of the team, I think, right now. There was a report that came out last week, I think I sent to you guys the other day, that Bridget Condon of the NFL Network spoke to members of the Seahawks organization. I don't know where that level was. They told her that they think they are a much better team at defending the middle of the field and coverage. That aligns with sort of Brian's view of the whole offseason. It's interesting. I haven't heard anyone from the team say that. I've heard fans say that, but those guys haven't been on the field. Dodson, Baker. So are they on the field? If they come out and it's Rattigan and it's O'Connell all of the offseason, that's definitely going to be the story of camp, and it's not a good thing. So, A, can Baker and Dodson get in the field? B, Tyrese Knight, I think, is a really intriguing player. We don't know. He could be a guy who never sees the field. He could be the emerging guy in the group. He's just such a raw player with tools that we don't know. So I think that position group, if it's just Baker and Dodson, great. I'm very happy to see that. And in terms of the other storyline, I guess I'll move to the other side of the ball. A lot of it's going to be about, yeah, Ryan Grubb. I don't have the background on Ryan Grubb that you guys have. I saw him in the playoff games. I tuned in here and there, but I don't know the ins and outs of his offense. I really relied on you two guys. The three of us did the show the night he got hired. And so anything that's new to me about Ryan Grubb and how the offense looks and how they're using players, I don't know if we're going to learn a lot about like player utilization. That's probably going to be kept under wraps until the season starts. But for me, it's like, what is Ryan Grubb going to bring to the table? Because I was not a Waldron guy by the end. I was pretty tired of him. I got really sick of a lot of the stuff he did. And so for me, a lot of my interest is going to be on offense there. And then on defense, can this, because I think if Baker and Dodson play, I'm totally fine with that group for this year. Like there's some people that are just like threat level midnight for the group, but I'm not super worried about them if they're on the field. If they're not on the field, that's going to be the dominant story for Andy Cameron.
Well, I am excited to get a chance once again to talk to Ryan Cleveland of Ryan Cleveland Coaching and Consulting, a friend of the Real Hawk Talk crew and pod. And Ryan, it is mid-year, and one of the things that's happening right around now, there's a lot of people either preparing for mid-year performance reviews or having just gone through one. And there's a lot of managers that are likely feeling a little trepidation about a tough conversation they might need to have with an employee. What's a tip that you've given folks that you've worked with in those situations?
You know, when you're having hard conversations, one of the things that you have to do as a leader or manager that's right from the get-go is create a sense of safety. A lot of times in leadership, you hear about the sandwich method. It's like say a positive thing, give your negative feedback, and then say another positive thing. The problem with that, I mean, the idea of that's noble, but the execution of that is actually can be pretty harmful because people won't accept what they can't believe to be true. So instead, I would encourage leaders to, one, provide a sense of safety. It's like, you know, name the emotion. This is probably really hard, this part. And it's like, hey, Brian, I've got something challenging that I need to say to you, but I just want you to know we're still good. I'm still for you. And I really want you to succeed. people can take that hard feedback if they feel like the person giving the feedback is doing it genuinely and is for them versus for themselves.
It's great advice. And having been someone who's both received performance feedback and delivered it, it's stressful on both sides, especially if the news is not ideal. So if somebody wants to meet with you and maybe get an initial conversation about how to prep for their next tough conversation, where should they go?
Yeah, just go to RyanCleveland.com. And that's the easiest place to find me. And from there, you can just book a discovery call and for free, complimentary. And we can kind of discover, see what your needs are. If it's just a one-time, five-minute advice thing, I'll just do that just because. Especially for any Hawk fan that wants to do that, that's awesome. But if it turns out that you might need some more long-term support, we can discuss those options if that's the right fit for you, because it's not the right fit for everyone.
Awesome. Ryan, people will be fortunate to get a chance to work with you. You are Real Hawk Talk approved, so people should absolutely get out there to RyanCleveland.com and get some help from Ryan preparing for your next tough conversation or just developing as a leader in general. That's RyanCleveland.com, Ryan Cleveland Coaching and Consulting. Thank you, Ryan, for joining, as always.
Thanks, Brian.
It's hard to not have so much emphasis on Christian Haynes. And I'm trying to talk myself into, you know what, it is okay if he starts the season as a backup. Like, not every rookie offensive lineman comes in and starts right away. But I feel like the bar is pretty low on this team. Of all teams to potentially come in as a rookie and start, this feels like a team that I'd love to see him prove that he's better than Anthony Bradford, prove that he's better than McClendon Curtis. You know, it's not like he's trying to beat out Kevin Zeitler or something like that. So I want to be realistic, but man, I want to see him move people. And I want to see him do enough that he forces the coach's hands in terms of putting him on the field. I think ultimately he is the bellwether of bellwethers for me about this team, because I think that I don't know enough about McClendon Curtis. I have not watched him enough to be able to say, but based off his, you know, track record, you know, there's a reason he wasn't drafted. There's a reason that he was able to be taken off the practice squad by the Seahawks and then on the practice squad for the Seahawks, all that. Like, this is not necessarily a guy from a pedigree perspective that is destined to be an all-pro guard. So that one to me, like, I'm actually, none of us mentioned Abe Lucas, or maybe you did and I missed it. But increasingly, if you're watching his workout videos, I've been assuming maybe he wouldn't be there to start training camp. I'm not so sure. I wouldn't be shocked if he is maybe not doing team drills, but that's another big storyline to me. So the whole right side of that line, big, big deal going into camp. Go ahead.
Was that quote about getting better in coverage at the linebacker position, was that just an indictment of Bobby Wagner last year?
Yeah.
Or was it an indictment of Jordan Brooks in that he's maybe not as good as some people think in coverage?
I'll add a third option, which is I heard that quote, and the way she said it is the Seahawks are confident that they got better in defending the middle of the field. That is what she said. And then she followed up by assuming that meant Jerome Baker and Tyrell Dodson. And my mind immediately goes to Rayshon Jenkins and Julian Love and Kayvon Wallace over some of the safety combinations that they had out last year, and then the linebackers as well. So I don't think it's like that they're not part of it, but I don't think defending the middle of the field is exclusively a linebacker conversation.
Yeah, that's a good call out. And I think you brought this up, I believe, but I was listening to the Move the Sticks podcast, and they were uniquely high on Rayshon Jenkins. And mm-hmm. I don't know if you know the background there. Bucky calls Jaguars games on the radio, and Daniel Jeremiah calls Chargers games on the radio. So that's their side piece. the two teams Jenkins has been on, the Chargers and the Jaguars. So no one would in the media would know Rayshon Jenkins better than those guys. They still do those games regularly. So those guys are pretty high on him. The fact that San Francisco target him as that veteran safety too, I think that was really interesting. So maybe you're on something, but I think it's pretty clear why those players were identified by the Seahawks and linebacker. The grades identified, and Derek had the same thought as you. It was pretty hard to watch Bobby against Kyle or McVay last year when they were just kind of like taking the microscope and doing the gif about like Kyle with the linebacker. Like, we love Bobby, but like that was painful last year, man.
One thing you guys said, and it has come up in other places, is what kind of run pass ratio are we going to see from Ryan Grubb? Like, how much is he going to lean on the run? Everyone's assuming that the Seahawks are going to pass more. That seems to be the basic assumption. What I've heard from them in general was run game. They've talked about the running backs. They've talked about toughness. And we've heard it from Mike McDonald. We've heard it from Ryan Grubb. But Derek, when I went back and looked, and I actually just did this during the show, the run percentage for Ryan Grubb both in 2023 and 2022 was essentially the same. It was 41%. They were roughly a 60-40 pass run team. He did not have the running back talent that he has in Seattle, but he also had an offensive line that he doesn't have in Seattle. So what is your, as a more dyed in the wool Huskies fan than I am, like, what's your expectation? Do you think that the Seahawks, I think, passed 63% of the time last year. So they were a heavy pass team last year already. Do you expect them to pass that much or more, or do you think they're going to run a little bit more?
I think the 60-40 sounds about right. Obviously, game state, game situation goes into that. But broadly, I'd say the 60-40 sounds about right. I would be surprised if they're going to be more pass heavy than they've been, at least by any real margin. I don't think they're going to go and throw the ball 75% of the time like maybe the Chiefs do in neutral situations. It's not something I see happening. They were a very balanced offense last year. Obviously, when they got leads, as they won every game, you're going to run a little more in the fourth quarter. But they were still pretty balanced throughout the games. And I also, one thing that was fairly unique was they ran a good mix of both zone and power concepts. So it was not, I'm going to run wide zone, I'm going to run inside zone, like with Tom Cable. So expect to see some more variation there in terms of style of run, which should also hopefully mean they're more adaptable. And, okay, maybe this defense is really keyed in on the inside zone or wide zone kind of stuff. Let's go power and run it at their throw faces. So
one of the things that I'm kind of, you know, Derek, you talked about in the past is that they use a lot of screen, there's a decent amount of screen game in Grubb's offense. And my mind early on went to Laviska Shenault, who's a guy that almost nobody talks about because it goes, you know, everyone's like top three, everyone knows, and then it's Jake Bobo. And then after that, even D. Eskridge gets more conversation and more, you know, pub than Shenault. We haven't heard almost anything about him, so maybe he's just not doing anything. But he's a guy coming into this training camp. I'm kind of curious what's going to happen between Eskridge and Shenault, and who knows, maybe another guy for that fifth receiver spot. Derek Young would be the guy, right? D. Eskridge is in that conversation. Are one of those guys going to win a like specific role as like a guy that's going to be their yards after catch guy? Because none of the guys in the top three are particularly big yards after catch guys.
I think before, Jeff, I'll let you answer, but let's not forget that the kickoff rules changed as well. So kick returns, I would not be surprised to see someone kept on the team for their kick return ability now that virtually every kick probably will be returned and you're gonna have a chance to do something. So I think Shenault has a chance to carve out a role on this team just for that, in addition to what he can do with the ball in his hands on a screenplay.
Yeah, I'm totally with Derek. I was going to bring that up as well. And I think both those guys are going to make the team now because of that kick return role. And obviously we have to see Eskridge stay healthy, but yeah, my gut is that Chenault is a chance to really have that role. And I don't know if I'm reading into things too much, but like the Seahawks have been like tweeting out team pictures and like individual things, like when they were in for OTAs, and it was like all their core players and then Chenault. And I was like, who is number 81? I don't know that guy. And then, so I'm probably reading too much into that. It might be absolutely nothing, but I think he's going to have a sneaky role. I'm with you, Brian. I think he's a guy that no one's going to talk about, but if they have that specific role in the grub offense, there's none of the receivers really fit that. And I think the fact that they targeted him pretty early, I think he fits that. I think one of those two guys, but I kind of get the feeling that Chenault.
There's a couple other sleeperish guys that I'm curious about that will depend on how Grubb runs his offense. One is Noah Fant. Like, you're more likely to talk about fifth receiver than you are to talk about the tight ends on this team. I think Noah Fant was pretty underutilized last year. And as a guy that was critical of him at times, I thought that he was a pretty solid player for the Seahawks when utilized last year. I think he's certainly more athletic than any tight end that Grubb has had at UW, at least. And so I'm curious how that affects. Like, Jack Westover is a great player in his own right, but he was not a stretch the field kind of athlete, or, you know, a guy that could do what Fant can do. So that's one that I'm curious about. The others related to tight end is this kind of potential for an H-back kind of role. Pharaoh Brown, you may or may not have been obsessive enough to hear him mention this in his interview, his press conference, but he played fullback as well for the Patriots and has done some fullback. We know Jack Westover has talked about the fact that, you know, Kyle Juszczyk is kind of a model of what he's hoping he can be in the NFL. Is there going to be an H-back role in this that we're not aware of, where Pharaoh Brown and a guy like Jack Westover might have a role that we just haven't seen before here, haven't seen recently, that becomes a bigger part? Probably not, but I am curious. I'm going to kind of keep my eye out for that one. How about this? Let's do some patron questions, because there's a bunch here I want to get through. And then if we have more time, we can talk about some other stuff. But if you haven't already clicked like and subscribe, please do so. Clicking like helps other people find the show, helps us feel like you guys are appreciating the work that we're doing. And we really do thank you for taking the time to do that. You can also join at patreon.com/hawkblogger. You get not only the audio versions of all the Hawkblogger morning podcasts and the emergency podcast and all that kind of stuff ad free, but you also get immediate access to the Slack channel, where you can ask us questions every week, like we're about to do, and also meet a bunch of really, really great people. It's a really cool growing community. So patreon.com/hawkblogger. All right. First question I'm going to give to you, Jeffrey Simmons. Comes from Cindy S. One of our best patrons for sure, says, how big of a competitive edge will the Seahawks have at the beginning of the season because there's no film to analyze, versus the disadvantage of the players' coaches adapting to new schemes, new coaching roles? I'll stop there because there's a second question, and I'll do that next.
I don't know if there's a historical precedent where you say, like, the coaches that you don't know, they come in and they're advantaged because you don't know them. These coaches are pretty twisted in terms of like the amount of film they're watching. Like people are going to go back and they're going to watch like years of Ryan Grubb film at Washington. They have access to all the film. I don't think it's a huge advantage that people are making out to be. I think if the coaches are as good as we think, they're going to be good. I don't think it's because of the unknown. There's just been so many different examples where we saw Urban Meyer come in, where no one knew what he was going to be in the NFL. He's the most disastrous coaching year we've ever seen. And we've seen things on the other side, where Brian did a show on all the first-year coaches that have worked. And Seattle is a really unique staff because of all the inexperience. But I think people have an idea of what Baltimore's defense, what the core principles were last year. But I don't think Seattle's going to catch Sean Payton off guard like crazy. They have months to study this team. Those coaches are, if you've been around any coach in the NFL, they're like, I don't know if anyone's seen the Hard Knocks show on the Giants and the coaching. like stuff Brian Daboll was talking about during these player interviews. It's like they're speaking a totally different language. These people are sick. And so I wish it was more of an advantage, but honestly, I think the fact that they're playing Denver and New England is a much bigger advantage that we have coaches that people might not know.
Well, and it's a good thing to call out. Ask it in reverse. Denver, first game of the season, Bo Nix may be the starting quarterback. Sean Payton's going to be approaching this offense likely differently than he did with Russell Wilson one way or another. There's a pretty significant unknown there. And I would personally rather know what the Broncos were going to do. It is uncomfortable to kind of really not know, because look, last year the Rams were kind of an unknown. If anything, there was an expectation that they were going to be awful last year. They're going to be a pushover. And then that first game was like, oh crap, they're not. And we just lost our starting tackles. That sucks. The only other one that comes to mind for me, again, it's these season openers in particular, is Zach Taylor with the Bengals. I think his first game was in Seattle, if I'm remembering correctly. And again, thought the team was going to be bad, and they kind of moved the ball up and down the field. And it's like, wow, this is not the Bengals pushover team I expected. So I wonder if part of it's going to be less about the unknown and more about, you assume that there's going to be some unknowns in that first game. I'm not sure the Seahawks have shown that they've been great at in-game adaptation for the last couple of years. I think Mike McDonald, Ryan Grubb are going to earn their stripes right away. And I think Ryan Grubb's going to be I think Mike McDonald's going to be a much more adept adapter to especially offenses that he's, you know, sees something he didn't expect in the first part of a game. All right. Cindy asked her second question. This is to all of us. Derek, I'll ask you to go first. What are your predictions for Seahawks win-loss record by the week 10 bye? I will put up on the screen for you the Seahawks schedule so that you can see this. And then
we're giving away our prediction show already.
This is only by week 10 bye.
I was going to say, do we have our predictions ready?
No, and the bonus is you get to change your answers once we have our prediction show, because you'll have a lot more information. Fair. Let me zoom in on this for you. And you even get the bonus here of I've got the probability of the wins. All right, let me get this out of the way. Hold on. All right. So Cindy is asking about these first nine games.
Man, 4-5, 5-4. That's a tough look. Those first two, hopefully those are wins, but Miami's not easy. Detroit away from home. San Francisco, Atlanta, who knows if Kirk Cousins is going to be healthy. And Buffalo, man, I'm going to say 4-5.
What about you, Jeff?
I'm going to go 5-4.
I'm going to go 6-3. I'll go 6-3. I'll push a little further, but
Brian, what games are they losing then for the three?
I think the Falcons game. I think the 49ers game. And the Lions game.
If we beat the Rams, I'm deeming McDonald as the greatest coach alive. Just after years of Sean McVay just owning Pete, I'm going to be like Evan level insufferable if we win that week 9 game.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of my current perspective, but we'll see. So thank you for the question, Cindy. Let's keep going. Next question comes from Conde. I can't even pronounce it. It's like 17 letters, and I'm not sure it's a real name. Says, and I apologize. If it is, please accept my apology and tell me how to pronounce it. It says, when will there be a top 10 countdown of Josh Cashman videos? Because this would be an absolutely incredible show. One of the most memorable and awesome periods of Seahawks and Seahawks Twitter lore. What do you guys think? Should we do a Josh Cashman watch party one of these times? Just Cable Thanos watch party?
I think that sounds fun. Would you get copyright struck though?
No, they're hosted on our channel.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I think the best part is how uncomfortable it would make him.
True. True.
I think that's what makes me want to do it more.
Yes.
I'm not saying that's not a reason, because those videos are incredible. Like that 2018 season, everyone thought was like the year all this thing was going to die. And like Josh basically revived the Seahawks fan base. And they're still hilarious, those videos. And yeah, I'm all in for that, especially just to troll Josh and make him uncomfortable. That's a huge added bonus.
And there's been a lot of pretenders to the throne there that have come on and tried to do. And I appreciate that people do it. And I don't mean to really throw shade their direction, but it wasn't just that Josh did these videos. His sense of humor and his creativity was just off the charts. So there will not be another Cable Thanos. And I'll see. Maybe if the Seahawks really capture all of our imaginations, we'll get a little celebratory Cable Thanos video. You never know. All right. Next question is for you, Derek. Jen Maz asks, does Kobe Bryant become the third safety or is he a practice squad player? I feel bad for him. Do you feel bad for Kobe Bryant?
It's a shame his career is not gone as we'd all hoped. I don't think he's the third safety on this team. I mean, if you're saying Rayshon Jenkins, they also signed Kayvon Wallace.
Julian Love.
Jarek Reed, I think, showed some flashes last year as well, more so on special teams, but maybe he can grow that into a defensive role as well.
Wouldn't sleep on Jonathan Sutherland or Ty Okada either. Those guys are pretty good as well.
So, yeah, I think it's more of a fourth safety, and then you're talking practice squad fringe. If he's eligible still for the practice squad.
He would be.
Yeah. Okay. He would be. This is a horrible comparison, but he's kind of become like the Brandon Jackson of DBs now.
Say more. Why?
He's kind of like the guy who isn't that special at anything. And he's like kind of dead average at everything. And he's kind of like, we're looking for like the unique trait. They always just talk about unique traits. I just don't see one other than like forcing fumbles. And like when he was playing nickel like a couple years ago, like didn't look great. And now he's already been switched positions. He was drafted as an outside corner. He's literally never played it. It's like, what's he good at?
You're killing like such Derek. An asshole. You're killing
Derek. Like I'm asshole. Laughing because I remember how much Jeff did not like Brandon Jackson. Our group chat every Sunday was just.
Well, he was part of like a bigger. Yeah. There was like a 4-year stretch where like the way the Seahawks handed their defensive line was like the death of my existence. And like the fact that they were playing this like guy with no talent every week and like he kept making the team and kept starting. And I'm like, they're going to kill me. And now their defensive line, it's taken like 5 years. Like Derek said, they're finally back to what looks like a pretty good defensive line. But there was a pretty ugly period in there where they were just putting out these guys like Brandon Jackson that I just low ceiling players. Yeah. LJ Collier, the low ceiling players get me.
Mark, yeah.
Thompson at safety, Lano Hill, Darbo. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're only a couple years removed from LJ Collier and Robert Kamdiche and Alton Robinson and Rasheem Green being the big upside guy. Like, it's not that far ago, that long ago. All right, next question. This is, you both can answer this. Amani Waddell asks, is there a forgotten player on this roster we haven't pounded the table enough for? Jeff, I'm going to start with you on that one.
I'm going to go with Zach Charbonnet on offense. I think he's really slipped under the radar. I think he's a guy who would have been a number one back on a lot of teams. I think he was a guy that wasn't as there was, we saw flashes with him last year, but I think he can be a really good player in this offense. And I think he could be, I think there's a chance he even beats Kenneth Walker. And so I don't know if that's the most underheralded. He was a second round pick last year, and we all agree that that was not a good pick. But if we ignore that for a second, I really like him. On defense, I think Jonathan Hankins. He's more of a one-year rental, and his impact on the Dallas run game, I know Derek ran some numbers for Brian a couple weeks ago, but the on and off splits with him the last 2 years were pretty striking in terms of like how effective they were stopping the run. And he was a guy Aiden Durday identified early as the guy they had to sign in the middle of their defense. They probably didn't think they'd get Murphy at that point, but I think he, if we've watched this run defense look like a complete joke the last 2 years, having a guy that can play in base, play in short yardage, because of all the defensive tackles, he's kind of gotten thrown under the radar. And I think he's a really good role player.
Those are good ones. Derek, how about you?
Yeah, that's a good one, Jeff. I would say Tre'Mont Jones. We don't know exactly what his role is in this team. I think the last report was that he's dropping weight and potentially going to be potentially be an outside linebacker in the scheme. Let's see. I think he's obviously more of a pass rusher than a coverage guy, an outside linebacker. But I'm curious to see. Obviously, he's on a big contract. If he doesn't show out this year, he's probably not going to be on the team next season. I think there's a dark horse, a little wild card in Nick Harris, offensive center. Scott Huff coached him at UW. This is a scheme in Ryan Grubb's offense that requires athletes all along the offensive line. I think having an athletic center like Nick Harris is something they're going to value. He hasn't played a lot. I know he's had some injuries. I'm not saying he's going to be the starter, but I think there's a chance there that he may have something that Olu doesn't in his athleticism.
That's a good one. I will throw out Mike Morris. I think Mike Morris has, on any other year, has a potential to be the most exciting young player on the defensive line, and that I'd be looking most forward to. This year, he's down the list, which in some ways means he could even be better in the rotations that he gets. So that's the guy that, if he's really good, even if he's just good, watch out. Like, that defensive line just becomes that much scarier, which would be fantastic. Plus, he's so fun, dude. He's so fun. Fans, when more fans get exposed to him, they're going to fall for this guy. And I think he just got married. All these guys are getting married out of college. Byron Murphy got married. I think Olu just got married. You know, Mike Morris getting married to, like, I don't remember that being the way for rookies coming in the league. It's usually a little bit harder for people to lock down these guys coming in, but I don't know. We'll see what that says about this group. All right. Here is a question from Sean Pyle. And I'd also like to hear from you guys on this. It's an either or answer. Which offensive line would you rather have? A, 5 average players, figure their PFF grade were around 60. Okay. No weakness, like no weak guys, but no stars. B, 2 high level players in the 80 to 95 range and 3 below average guys that are below 55 grade. Which would you rather have, A or B? Derek, you take this one first.
I'm going to say the 5 average guys. There is some research, and I can't pull it up right now, but there is some research that the strength of your offensive line, or, you know, the quality that your offensive line provides in terms of protection for a quarterback, really relies on your 3rd, 4th best player, and not just having one good guy can shore up a whole offensive line, obviously. So I would take the 5 average guys, because we're skipping 3 really bad guys.
Jeff?
Derek's probably right that, like, your weakest link can really believe. Like, we saw last year with Jay Curran in a couple games, and there are teams where you just put a sieve in there But I've watched the Seahawks offensive line for the last 10 years, and I'm just craving that like 85 to 90 player. So any line where he gets me that 85 to 90, like Tristan Wirfs kind of guy, like I am taking that line right now. It's been so long. And like, yeah, like if San Francisco's the line right now, it's probably the best example of that, where you have Trent Williams, who's like probably the 95 level player, and then a bunch of kind of stiffs. And that has arguably cost them from winning the Super Bowl. But I don't think I can take another one of these like Austin Blythe offensive lines where it's fine, but there's no excitement. I'm going to take like the San Francisco-esque line.
I 100% take that. And there's a little bit, I think the implication from Derek's answer is more about if it was just this year. For me, if you've got two star players, it's like a poker hand, man. Then you've got two cards to keep, and you can change out the other ones and hopefully get better at those positions. If you got five average guys, you're nowhere. Like, you haven't advanced at all. You've got Charles Crosses, like the Charles Cross that we've had for the last few years has been, you know, a 68, like a slightly above average starter. Not good enough. That's not going to get you anywhere in this league. So I would much rather have a Trent Williams like player, even a Kevin Zeitler like player who is solidly, you know, Pro Bowl level, than have guys that are just not difference makers. But as Jeff said, Derek's always got data to back up his perspective. I've just got, you know, an ornery attitude about it. So
look, that wasn't an easy answer for me. I really was considering going with the two good guys, and obviously if you're building a roster, I'd probably take it that way. But
well, it's good. It's good listening if we don't all say the same thing. So I like that you had a different perspective. Hawks fan Matt Mann has a question, and I think this is one I'll answer as well. Says, do you have any kind of time frame in mind when you might start to press the panic button if the team isn't progressing well enough through any growing pains this season? Is there a time frame in mind for any of you?
I think the bye's in a good spot this year. Week 10 with the extra game now, that's basically just midpoint of the season. I think if they stumble out of the blocks against Denver or New England and they're going in there at 2-7, I'm getting worried about. Obviously, we don't know if it's offense or defense that's performing poorly or both. Hopefully not both. That's where I'd be starting to get a little worried about, is this team gonna, or are these coaches gonna be here in the long run?
Jeff, I'm curious if you feel the way I do about this. I'm guessing you might, but there's two different answers. There's one about the season, and yeah, I think if the team starts out 0-2 against the Broncos and the Patriots, then my expectations for the season drop precipitously. Like, it could happen that quickly. Mm-hmm. But as far as the panic button on the Mike McDonald regime and the Ryan Grubb regime, honestly, it's like week 18. They could have a 3-12 record, win their last couple games, and start to see, okay, this group's coming, they're getting it. And I would be like, cool. If they just get blown out all season, which I don't expect, then yeah, then it starts to be like, oh. But even then, I still would have some belief that Ryan Grubb and Mike McDonald would learn the offseason, would come back better prepared, and would do better the next season. So I don't feel like there's a time this season I could really panic about the regime overall. How about you?
I'm with you. I think it's the really like the last it's the last couple games, I'd say. Really, it's like if they hadn't figured it out by then, I don't think I would panic, but I would definitely start to think like maybe this is. But the thing with this is, I think you know it when you see it. Like the Jim Mora year, like you knew that wasn't, there was nothing to believe in. You knew that team didn't have it. That was a weird team though. It was like veteran, no young talent. But like, look at, well, Pete Carroll, like the best coach in Seahawks history, whether you liked him or not, most he whiffed on this first offensive coordinator hire. Like Jeremy Bates was 1 year and they fired him after 1 year. So if Ryan Grubb comes out, he just doesn't have it. Look, the most successful coach in Seahawks history just went one and done with their first OC. So I don't panic if that happens. It's not a big deal. They can find it out. They have guys on staff that can come up. They have other connections. So I think it would take a lot for me to panic. Like it would have to look like that Jim Mora year. But even if they go 0-2, and I think it just depends how it looks. If it's something where like they fumble the ball away or something like that, or but if these guys just look over their heads, you'll be able to tell. So I think it's going to take a lot for me to get to that point, but I can't really envision a scenario where that happens. It would have to honestly look like the Jim Mora year.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. You guys both mentioned if they go 0-2. I'm going to give them a little grace, given that it's Mike McDonald's first head coaching job ever, I think. Ryan Grubb, first time in the NFL. You know, when you're looking at that schedule, that's why I wouldn't be shocked if they only win even 3 games by that week 9 or week 10 bye. But like what Jeff said, I like what Jeff said about it's something that you'll kind of see and feel that, okay, are they making in-game adjustments? Are they just getting some bad bounces? Is there a feeling around the team that they got something going?
What were you going to say, Jeff?
Well, I was going to say, like, that's sort of my perspective, what Derek said at the beginning. It's sort of my perspective the whole season. Like, I think there is going to be an adjustment period for these guys. I really like the roster of this team. I really like where it's going. I really like where they've stacked up. And that's why the results, unless it looks awful, aren't the thing I'm going to judge the thing by. I think you can see, and me and Brian have talked about this a lot, you can feel it, you can see it. And it happened with Baltimore once they got Roquan and the whole thing clicked. We saw it with Pete Carroll once the second half of 2011. Everyone will always say, oh, Pete Carroll won 7-9 because they didn't have Russell Wilson yet. When they played Baltimore and they played Philly that year, something flipped. You felt it. And that's what I'm looking for these guys. I don't know if you remember those games in 2011 in the second half. You felt something was different. Then they went and they almost beat San Francisco, who should have won the Super Bowl that year. So.
Well, I mean, that's more where my mind is right now, is the opposite of the question from Matt here is at what point in the season would you let go of your skepticism and buy in that, holy crap, this might be a really good team now? And I think, Jeff, you kind of inferred it a little bit earlier talking about beating the Rams. You know, winning games that the Seahawks have not historically won, or winning games differently than they've historically won, or even losing games differently than they've historically lost. And there's a number of prove it games pretty quick out of the gates. And I'd even say the Broncos game is a prove it game. Sean Payton is one of the most successful coaches in NFL history. That team won like 8 games last year. It wasn't this like 3-win team, and they got pretty awful defensive play. I think there's reason to believe their defense. I mean, I think that's a tougher game than people give it credit for. And if Mike McDonald in his very first game as a head coach beats Sean Payton, I think that's a pretty big deal. I think other people will be like, they're supposed to beat the Broncos. I'll look at that and be like, not easy to win your first game as an NFL head coach. I think the Dolphins game at home right away is like, there's a game where McDaniel embarrassed Mike McDonald. There's a game where Mike McDonald embarrassed Mike McDaniel. There's been both. And so what does that look like with this crew? We'll know because, you know, where does this defense rate relative to, there's some people that say that the Seahawks defense has more talent than the Ravens defense did that. And I'm like, I don't buy that at all yet. There was all pros at every level of that defense. There's not a single all pro yet on any level of this defense. So I'm not there, but so in any event, like, I'm curious. You're going to be away in Detroit. That's a game they've won the past 2 years. I think that's a really, really good Detroit team. I don't expect them to win that game. And then the 49ers, the Falcons, the Bills, the Rams, those are all before the bye. And those are all prove it style game. So if the team comes out and they're like 6-3 or 7-2 through that stretch, I'm going to be all over you guys. I'm going to be like, don't tell me that wins and losses don't matter this year. Don't tell me this is about building. Like, this team's good right now.
10-year contract. 10-year contract for Mike McDonald. Yeah,
extend him.
Exactly. Oh, if they go 7-2, my head goes into a totally different space. Because I think they're going to get – yeah.
I want to see – Jeff's going to have an Evan-level reaction if that happens.
No, if they're 7-2, it's like, all right, there is no adjustment period. I was wrong. Who gives a shit? But
yeah,
I think they're eventually going to get there. But if they just go like supersonic year one, I think they got the talent to do it. It would be an incredible coaching job to get it happen that fast. But for me, Brian, the question, I think it's the Rams and the Niners games.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two games that ultimately got the Pittsburgh game. But I think if John and ownership was really looking at it, the big picture perspective of this team was they got lapped by McVay and Shanahan. They were no longer a consideration for the division title. Those are the two hot coaches in the league. They never felt particularly close in any of those Niners games the last couple of years. They were kind of toying with them schematically. And we know about the Rams. The only year they really had success against the Rams was when Stafford and Donald were both out. And it was still close. And they should have won. They should have probably won 2-0 against the Rams last year. But either way, I think those are the big marker points to me. If they can come in and go toe-to-toe with the Niners, even if they lose that game, to me, that is a dramatic difference to what we've watched the last few years. Or I think, and what I'm really looking for is like Mike McDonald's supposed to be this scheme lord, this kind of like the defensive McVay, and where these coaches have come from is how good they've been schematically. And what made McDonald such a hot coaching candidate is he took down basically all these offensive coaches other than McVay, really. If we can see that with the Seahawks right away, I think their ceiling just becomes dramatically higher. And I think that's the most exciting thing. It's not just hiring like the Jim Harbaugh where they're going to tough you out. If you can have that like defensive dominant mind that can go toe to toe with these guys right away, I think my adjustment period bullshit goes out the window. And I think we could get excited right away.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that was coming to my mind as you're saying that, Jeff, is everyone thinks about the 49ers and they think about Shanahan versus McDonald, offense versus defense. One of the things that would get me most excited gets us all the way back to the beginning of our conversation, which is I think that 49ers run defense is absolute crap. It was bad last year. People don't realize it was in the 20s, 25th ranked run defense last year. It was a really bad run defense. And now they've lost Arik Armstead and Dre Greenlaw for at least some period. We don't know how Hufanga is going to be coming back. Malik Collins, Leonard Floyd, and Javon Hargrave are all awful run defenders. If the Seahawks offensive line and that running back group and Ryan Grubb can get that team running over the 49ers instead of what's been happening, like the very first carry where Christian McCaffrey goes 70 yards on the Seahawks defense, like if the Seahawks can actually be the more physical team on the ground on offense versus the 49ers defense, that for me would be like, okay, the dynamics, even if they lose, the dynamics of this matchup have changed. So that's something I'll definitely be looking at. I can't wait, guys.
I know. And you know, it's cool. Like when the Niners played the Ravens last year, the Niners were on this like run where it just seemed like they were unstoppable. They had that losing streak and then everyone came back and then the Ravens punched them in the mouth. And that's where the whole thing felt different for San Francisco. And it's like in Rocky IV when Ivan Drago starts bleeding. But if we can get that back with the Seahawks against the Niners, I think our vibes about the team are just going to, I think Brian's so right. I think it's going to totally change. And McDonald was the one who did it last year. They should have lost both playoff games last year, San Francisco.
They totally should have. I mean, is there a more lucky play than
that? I think it was that Baltimore game that, yeah.
Sorry, Jeff, there's a little lag.
I was with Evan live. Oh, I was with Ayuk. I was with Evan live, man. He's got a picture of my face when that happened.
So bad. So bad. All right, there's one more question from patrons, and then we will let you guys go. Comes from Sam Brown, and it says, what does success look like this year, specifically for Geno Smith? Do one of you want to jump on this one? Derek, I'm going to give it to you, man. You're not on.
There's not a hard number I'm going to put on it, but just a more consistent Geno Smith. I think we've seen some really, really good periods, especially in 2022. Where he was playing like a top five quarterback at times. I think we then saw kind of a drop towards the end of the season. Last year was up and down. Obviously, there were injuries across the offensive line. He can't control that. But a more consistent Geno Smith, I think, would be extremely encouraging. And I could see this team easily winning 10 games if that's the case.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. All right, fellas. This has been fun.
Ryan, I did have one more thing. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, please. Go ahead.
You mentioned Noah Fant in training camp and if he's maybe unheralded. In 2019, it's a bit of a deep pull, but I just remember Ryan Grubb talking about this. Kalen DeBoer, when he was at Indiana in 2019, same offense. Their tight end was their number two receiver. And Ryan Grubb kind of talked about last year how this offense is pretty adaptable in what it can do in terms of – you know, highlighting the tight end, highlighting the receiver, highlighting the running backs. So I think there's some potential for Noah Fant to really make a big leap forward in terms of his production this year.
I buy it. I absolutely buy it. I think he was super underutilized last year, and we'll see. I will say I got some from some betting line that the over-under for DK Metcalf on the year was like 1,000 yards receiving, which is pretty low. And I think JSN was like 780, something like that.
I'd take the over on that.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. But Noah Fant's a guy, I wouldn't be surprised if his over-under is like 300 yards, you know? And I think I'd hammer the over on that. I think he could have a big year. All right, let's wrap there. I really appreciate.
Oh, I have one closing thought too.
Oh well, fine, Jeff. You're so pushy. This Canadian with all the needs. Go ahead. What do you want to say?
Okay, I told Brian to watch the Hard Knocks show on the Giants this week. I have a Seahawks related thought. Man, that Mike Kafka hire would have been bad. He has the Shane Waldron vibe of like the guy in the back of the room who doesn't speak. So what they showed in the last episode was Brian Daboll met with Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and JJ McCarthy. And Daboll was awesome in this episode. He's like grilling them through the process. He's swearing. He's mother effing them. He's doing all this stuff. And Kafka's in the back of the room and he's the quarterback guy, the offensive coordinator. He doesn't say a word in the meetings where they're talking about this guy. Like he like has his like head in the side of the background. He's like, he's got like the big beta vibes. And like, man, if we have the offensive coordinator and it's Kafka, or he might've been, I don't like, there was rumors before McDonald closed that he was going to be the guy, and you're watching the show and he's kind of like the pushover in the organization. Like he's, has no presence at all. And I was just like, and I heard someone, I think it was Chris Ballard, was on one of the podcasts I listened to. He's like, you got to get so lucky in this league. So much of this league is around luck. And we talked about that with Byron Murphy, one domino, the Mike McDonald thing, watching Mike Kafka on the show, who's like such a beta kind of guy so far. And then Chase Daniel comes out today and it's like, he played with Andy Reid and Kafka. He's like, this is not the Kafka offense. I don't recognize a single play call. They literally had the quarterback all going through play calls. And I'm like, this guy might've been the head coach of McDonald's. Like this was dangerously thin to like a really. And so if you watch the show, I'm curious if you have the same takeaway, but man, I was watching that last night being like, oh my God, this guy was like,
I have
I remember not... Brian, you felt the same way.
I have not watched the Hard Knocks yet. I haven't watched for the last few years, but you and other people have said this is really good, that the access is much better. And so I'll definitely make some time for it. And I think it's a great point with all the luck. I would also say with Kafka, and you kind of were pointing this out too, it's not just the head coach thing, but they blocked him from being the OC for the Seahawks. And there is implication that if they hadn't, that he might have gotten the job over Ryan Grubb. And Ryan Grubb was going to Alabama. Like, there's a lot of things that had to happen for this exact group. And then you go from there, Ryan Grubb coming here meant Scott Huff came here. Scott Huff wouldn't have been coming here if Ryan Grubb didn't. And I don't think Kafka was coming with some offensive line, like well-known offensive line coach. So anyway, you're right. There is so much good luck that seems to have lined up, stars that seem to have lined. But we won't know till we know. And we're getting closer and closer and closer. So I'm going to try to wrap one more time, unless you guys have anything else. I'll pause. I shouldn't assume. Jeff, you look like you got something. What do you want to say?
No. I just said my piece.
All right. That was good. I appreciate that, man. All right. That was Derek Gebbie at DERYCKG _ on Twitter. Jeff Simmons at Real Jeff Simmons on Twitter. We're here. We would appreciate, with all the folks that are here, to give a like, click subscribe, join at patreon.com/hawkblogger, support the show. Appreciate you all. I will be back with you tomorrow morning for Hawkblogger Mornings, which will be 109 straight days of Seahawk coverage. We will get back into it tomorrow. What's that episode going to be about? I don't know. I wake up and I decide. We'll figure it out. And we'll get into it then. But appreciate you all. Take care. I'm Brian Nemhauser. This has been episode 322 of Real Hawk Talk.
Then, if you haven't already done it, go to patreon.com/hawkblogger and subscribe for just $5 a month. Gets you immediate access to our Slack channel. Join hundreds of folks in that community to talk Seahawks about wins, losses, and all things in between. Not to mention, become eligible to win giveaways for Seahawks tickets and get to ask questions of the Real Hawk Talk crew every week on the show. Finally, if you haven't gone to hawkblogger.com recently, head on over. Tail the Tape Morning After articles are there every week. Hoping to see you there. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for supporting the show. Go Hawks.